Thank you very much, Noor. I thank David and the Centre for the Economic Development of Australia for the invitation to speak to you today. I also see my friend Professor Gavin Brown from Sydney University, the Vice-Chancellor, who was particularly pleased to see me appointed to the Defence Portfolio, I suspect. And for those of you who are devotees of motorcycling, I've written a piece reviewing the new Triumph Twin series for 2007 for Australian Road Rider, so there you go. In the topic I've been asked to speak to is constructing a regional security community. And if you think about our region, however it's defined, we have about 13,000 Australians who at any one time are living in it. Last year, 21.1% of Australia's GDP was traded in goods and services across the region. And as Professor Brown and others of you from the education sector know, we last year had 191,000 Asian students either studying in Australian institutions in Australia or indeed campuses established throughout the Asian region. By any standard, the region is critically important to Australia, not only in political and economic terms, but also in terms of our security. Over the last century, our country, along with that of our key allies, has seen off totalitarianism, firstly in the form of fascism, then subsequently through the Cold War, communism. And amongst the many defining challenges in security for our generation, and obviously our own country, not just regionally but globally, is that of terrorism, which is in many ways a global insurgency which is being driven predominantly but not only by Islamic extremism and those who have hijacked the otherwise good name of Islam to build a violent political utopia. Much of it extending throughout the world, not only through Europe and the Middle East and into North Africa, but of course into Central and to South Asia. And it is in many ways a violent subversion to undermine political, economic and cultural security throughout our world. In looking at our region and building some sort of community of security, we are preparing in defence not only for the things that we know, but indeed the things that we do not. And what is shaping that are many things, but it includes weapons of mass destruction and the transfer of their precursors, whether chemical, biological or nuclear. Also the prospect of failing states. We cannot afford to have nations which become havens to transnational crime or terrorism on our border or indeed in any other part of the world. We're also adapting to the normalisation, which should be encouraged and supported, of the Japanese Self-Defence Force. And Australia has already deployed to the Amatana province in southern Iraq in support and protection of Japanese engineers. We also need to change our posture and our outlook should the United States choose to change its own strategic outlook throughout the world. And one of the risks which I think we all face is that if the United States pursues an isolationist posture, leaving the Middle East under circumstances other than of its own choosing, then we risk a change in the US presence and participation in providing security to the architecture within our region. We're also facing the challenge of so-called asymmetric threats. Even in relatively poorly developed nations, those who are potential or real adversaries are inquiring increasingly lethal means of doing damage, if not causing injury and death to our defence and other personnel. The technological and economic revolution in our region, particularly in Southeast Asia, is to be supported and encouraged, but that also means that nations in our region are acquiring increasingly sophisticated forms of military capability. We're also gearing up for what might be the impacts of climate change as we go over the next 20, 30, 40 or indeed 50 years throughout this century. And we also need to be prepared in terms of regional security for population shifts which might be associated with that or indeed other causes. As we look out to the region, we are also, as Australians, for the first time in our history since European arrival, facing the prospect in our region, particularly in Northeast Asia, of both a strong China and a strong Japan and the challenges that that will bring. We also face, as I say, the defining issue in many ways for security for our generation, which is that of terrorism. And we're also living in a region where, at the moment, we have leadership in Indonesia with President Bambang Yudhoyono, and then in Malaysia of Prime Minister Abdullah Badawi, where two large Muslim countries, where President Yudhoyono is driving significant economic and political reform. He has increased and expanded the role of the civilian defence minister, also transferring internal policing increasingly to the police forces away from TNI. He's also invited peacekeepers in to monitor the Aceh peace process. We've also seen very difficult but important decisions made in terms of fuel pricing in Indonesia. And we've also seen the Indonesian government, led by the President, supporting endeavours not only by Indonesia and Australia but other countries to counter terrorism in Indonesia and throughout the region. And with Prime Minister Abdullah Badawi, amongst many other things, the Ninth Malaysia Plan, which is not only about economic but human development out to 2010, a very strong focus, as in Indonesia, on anti-corruption measures. We've seen the Malaysians offer to host the negotiations between the Philippines government and the Moro Islamic Liberation Front in the southern Philippines, and we've also seen it hosting the, or offering to mediate at least, discussions between the Thai authorities and the separatist movement in southern Thailand, which we should all hope doesn't become globalised. So they are essentially just a snapshot of the issues that we're facing throughout the region, and then of course we have our more immediate neighbourhood, which extends through what Professor Paul Dibb has described as the arc of instability from East Timor through to the Southwest Pacific. In looking at the security and defence of our country in this, the 21st century, our view is that it's essentially about three things. The first, of course, is the protection of our own homeland, and there isn't at the moment, of course, any foreseeable nor credible threat to Australia's direct homeland interests. But we focus unashamedly also on the protection of our borders, our gas and oil platforms, to ensure that we don't have people illegally taking our fish stocks, and also that people arrive in our country lawfully if they're seeking a favourable immigration outcome. We also take the view that protecting Australia, our interests and our values, because one in five Australians are overseas at any one time, and almost all of us would have significant financial investments in almost every part of the world by virtue of superannuation, apart from other things. We take the view that what happens in our region has everything to do with our security. Not just Southeast and Central Asia and Northeast Asia, where three of our four major trading partners are, but also in the Southwest Pacific. Security, stabilisation, counter-terrorism, maritime border protection, humanitarian and disaster relief are just some of the priorities that we have set for ourselves, particularly in the Southwest Pacific, for which we need to be prepared and willing and able to be an active participant into the future. And the third, which is no less important, is to recognise that in the same way that economic changes, whether it's the Shanghai stock market or what happens in North America and the financial markets, in the same way that changes and unpredicted actions and outcomes happen in those markets affect us economically, so too what happens in security in those parts of the world has everything to do with us, particularly in this century. So we take the very strong view that protecting our interests and our values and our people is as much about what we do globally, and in that sense supporting and nurturing our alliances, as what we do locally. In building the community of security, I suppose, in our region, there are a number of reasons why we need to do it. The first is that Australia, whilst we are a relatively affluent and prosperous country, we are 20 million people, we're 0.3% of world population, there's a limit to what we can actually do in our region on our own in terms of our military capability, in terms of our economic and other ability to provide the security in the region. We need to work with other people. The second thing is that we need to have the capacity to build into security in the region the actions of larger nations. So, for example, the Southwest Pacific Defence Coordinating Program, which is between us, the United States, New Zealand and the French, is one example of us making sure that we have larger nations participating in providing regional security. And at the moment, if you're not aware of it, there is a little bit of competitive tension between the People's Republic of China and that of Taiwan in getting support for their particular view of the region from some of the Pacific nations. We also very much believe that if we want to build a community of security, it's not just about military hardware. In fact, if that is all we do, we will fail. It needs to be taken at a multilateral level, and it needs to be taken as a whole of government level. It is as much about aid, education, governance, policing and military effort as anything else. And so, for example, when we went into the Solomon Islands, invited by the Solomon Islands government, in 1999, for example, Australia's trade with the Solomon Islands was 99 million. After the unrest, it was down to 55 million. So if you want to look at it from something other than a humanitarian perspective, there's obviously an economic self-interest in it as far as Australia is concerned. But what we have done there, we've worked with the other Pacific Island nations, we've worked with the Solomon Islands government, we've taken a whole-of-government approach, which includes, for example, I think $28 million that has been put into policing as just one example of what we do in the Solomon Islands, and so too in East Timor, that it's not just about providing security in partnership with New Zealanders and previously Portuguese and Malaysians. It's also about how we build effective governance in these nations and work with other partner countries to do so. The other thing that's important and why we would even focus on it is, as I said earlier, it's in our interests. We cannot afford any of these nations to be havens for transnational crime, terrorism or other forms of instability, let alone an ongoing humanitarian crisis. And amongst many other things, we put $83 million of your money last year into what we call a defence cooperation program. It supports a range of initiatives in the region. For example, we currently provide 22 patrol boats to 12 Pacific Island nations. We help maintain them. We provide technical training. We also collaborate in the exchanging at appropriate level of intelligence and other information to help support security in our region. Australians, as I've said in international fora, are pragmatic. We don't generally believe in travelling dinner clubs. We believe in strong, effective and appropriate bilateral relations, particularly those that are in our own interests. We support the multilateral fora, whether it's APEC or the ASEAN Regional Forum, which, as you know, is 26 nations, including the EU. We also support the East Asia Summit, and we also support the ASEAN Plus 3, which particularly brings, as I say, our three major trading partners in Northeast Asia into the picture, China, South Korea and Japan. So I think I'll stop because I know you want questions, Lenore, so I'm happy to take questions about that or any other issues.